Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We're just here sipping our Arnold lemonade, ready to recite poetry about the nicest boy ever. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Chitaki Harry.
And I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
This episode was produced by Jason Daphnis, who very recently got a lead in the school play, a local production of A Streetcar Named Desire. Good for him. You can find Jason on Twitter at Nintendoofus. He's gone viral a few times, so go back and find those. You can enjoy those, I'm sure. You can also, speaking of socials, keep up with us, the podcast that is on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. Harvey and I sit in the bars, have a drink or two, and play the jukebox. And soon, the faces of all the other people, they turn toward mine, and they smile. And they're saying, "We don't know your name, mister, but you're a very nice fella." Harvey and I warm ourselves in all these golden moments. We've entered as strangers, and soon we have friends. And they come over, and they sit with us, and they drink with us, and they talk to us. They tell about the big terrible things they've done, and the big wonderful things they'll do. Their hopes, their regrets, and their loves, and their hates. All very large, because nobody ever brings anything small into a bar. And then I introduce them to Harvey, and he's bigger and grander than anything they offer me. And when they leave, they leave impressed. Same people seldom come back, but that's envy, my dear. There's a little bit of Z in the spelling of kids. Today we're here to talk about episode 97 of Hey Arnold. For those of you keeping track at home, that is season 5, episode 17, going by production code order. We're going to start with episode A, which is called Timberly Loves Arnold, original air date January 28th, 2003. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Gerald's little sister, Timberly, I can't quite do it as well as Gerald. Timberly develops a crush on Arnold after he sticks up for her and lets her hang out with them. Arnold is embarrassed at first, but when he finds out that Lila considers this admirable of him, Arnold is content to keep his mouth shut and let the charade continue. And I've got a Wikipedia note. It is, I guess, technically relevant for both A and Episode B. This is the final episode where Spencer Klein and Sam Gaffaldi voice Arnold and Sid before the first film officially began production. The first Hey Arnold film, that is, Alex D. Lins and Sam's younger brother, Taylor Gaffaldi, voiced the respective characters for the last two episodes from the fifth season, starting with April Fool's Day until The Journal, which were the last two episodes made for the series. So that is something to listen for over these next few episodes, and shouting out the folks who made this particular episode possible. Frank Weiss directed this one, and the writing credit goes to show author Craig Bartlett. Maybe you've heard of him. But enough about them, more about us, specifically Emily first. Emily, we'll kick it to you first. What did you think about Timberly Loves Arnold?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I think Timberly Loves Arnold. I think I love Arnold. I think Harry loves Arnold. Cody loves Arnold. Who doesn't love Arnold? He's the nicest boy ever, as Timberly notes. And this is the most that he's ever blushed in an episode of this show. You got that nice digital animation blush going on in this particular season. And what else about it? I think, it's nice to see Timberly again. We haven't seen her in a minute. I feel like we haven't seen Gerald a lot either, so good to spend some time with the Johansons. The lemonade stand was especially funny, that Timberly sets up a lemonade stand with free poems that Grandpa then quickly learns are poems about Arnold. And one of my very favorites of those poems was the one called He's Fine, which goes, "He's fine, that Arnold boy o' mine. You never hear him whine. He's so fine. He's Arnold." And yeah, just a really well-rhymed, and the beats are so nice. Yeah, just the meters, everything about it. All the poems are great. Lila skips on over to this lemonade stand of poetry and is so charmed by the fact that Arnold is like hanging out with Timberly, and like, "Oh, that's so sweet. You're hanging out with your best friend's little sister. Like, how gallant of you," she says. And Arnold's like, "Gallant? What?" But so we have a whole spiel going on where Arnold kind of gets to learn a lesson this time, though. The tables sort of turn, and Lila gets to be the one to be like, "Arnold, I don't like that you you did this, and you kind of manipulated the situation. But you know what? It was also good what you did, but also not so good." And she goes back and forth, and he's blushing, and he's not blushing, and he's like, "What's going on?" Anyway, I also think the episode itself is kind of funny in that it ends on this beat of like, "Man, girls, right, bro?" Which, same, I guess. But yeah, I think it's all over the place a little bit with some stuff. I like that it starts with the reference to Arnold and Gerald looking for Thelonious Monk records. They're going to go record shopping. How cool of them. They're looking for jazz records. There's also a cursed image of a giraffe, two giraffes that are Arnold daydreams look like him and Lila while he's hanging out with Lila and Timberly at the Dinoland theme park. But yeah, I don't know what else to say about it, but I think that it was just good to see Timberly. The lesson is more so like a, "Aha, we got you, Arnold." Arnold gets to learn a lesson. And I thought that was nice. And also, yeah, girls, man. Damn, dude.
Damn, dude. Harry, damn, dude.
Thank you, Cody. Your Jimmy Stewart impression is better than I've ever heard it. There were a couple of words with like that crispness on them that I was really, really impressed with. So congratulations on reaching a new high floor there. That was very good. I like this episode a lot. After watching it, I read some stuff that was kind of strange, right? Like I read in the Arnold Wiki that Craig Bartlett wrote this episode explicitly to sort of tie a bow on the Lila Arnold relationship in order to pave the way for Helga's confession and Hey Arnold the movie. I don't know if that's true, right? Like the wiki doesn't cite its sources, so who knows? If that's true, this episode didn't do that, so I don't really know why that was a thing. That being said, I think that this does shine as a Craig episode in some ways because it's very specifically about, like, I think Craig has a really great way of making episodes about situations that, well exaggerated, are actually something that may happen to kids or something that kids may sort of like understand. Like, I think I remember like my friends' younger siblings having crushes on me or on my friends and not knowing what the hell to do about it, right? And it just being sort of like really like awkward and sort of obnoxious, and like you don't want to like hurt their feelings, but also like very clearly like they don't understand what's happening. And I think that there's something really resonant about that, especially because it's so in character for both Timberly and Arnold, right? Like, of course Arnold is going to be the nice guy who's like, "Yeah, Timberly, you can come along and I'll show you how to use a frisbee and stuff," not only because he's just that nice, but also because, you know, having a younger sibling is going to be novel to him in a way that it isn't for Gerald. I even think that like this is a rare and very welcome subversion of the norm where Arnold is kind of the selfish one here, right? Like he sort of takes on a much more conventional sitcom protagonist like action here where he tries to manipulate the situation with Timberly so that he can hang out with Lila, whom he has that big crush on. And it like works out for a little while until his conscience gets the better of him, as we knew it would because he's Arnold. I think that's a refreshing take. It's weird. It's a weird placement for this episode. It feels like kind of a throwback in a lot of ways to like a season 3 episode or something, which is, I guess, my other meta criticism, if you want to call it that, which is that like I don't really know that I needed a tie-up for the Lila episode. In fact, I kind of thought that like making Lila such a focal point of episodes this late in the game was counterproductive in some ways. It was sort of like, oh, like I kind of thought we already did the Lila stuff and we were moving forward. That being said, I like Lila. I really like the, I love Arnold as simp. I think it's like one of his most human characteristics. Again, I remember being the boy who had hopeless crushes on girls who would never, never like me and still trying to like somehow get them to, which is such a losing battle. I've always liked it when Lila sort of strings Arnold along, because I think that there's something very resonant about that, even though it can kind of get into choppy waters sometimes. But I kind of like it as like a character trait where like Lila is so guileless that when she is sort of stringing Arnold along, we legitimately don't even know if she is meaning to do that or if this is just Arnold like grabbing onto anything floating in the chopping waters to keep from drowning, right? And he's interpreting it that way, and therefore we're interpreting it that way. But yeah, a lot of great character work in this from Arnold, from Lila, from Timberly. I'm going back and forth on how the Timberly thing resolves. I think it's disarmed immediately, and Arnold never really faces the consequences of making Timberly upset, which I didn't really like on one hand. But then on the other hand, it felt very true to life, right? Where like Timberly would definitely just immediately move on and like actually doesn't really think of Arnold as a boyfriend because she doesn't really know what a boyfriend is, right? She's in first grade. So like what that means to her is something different from what Arnold thinks it means or what it means to Arnold. I did laugh when Arnold said, sorry, Timberly, but I have to be with girls my age, because it's like, well, sure, but also you're 9, so like you don't actually have to be with anybody, because like I don't really know that you need to be having girlfriends when you're 9 years old, but maybe that's me being a prude, I don't know. I guess I had it on either hand, right, where like I could see liking it in some ways and not liking it in others. And then when this whole like, well, Craig actually wrote this episode to send off Lila, it made me dislike it a little bit more, because it made it kind of clear that like this episode was like actually stealthy, supposed to be about that last conversation between Lila and Arnold, which makes me a little bit mad, because that conversation didn't actually move anything forward, which is okay for the series, but not if we actually wanted that to be the sort of bow to tie around the relationship, which is especially silly when you consider that the B plot still revolves around Lila, sort of. So I don't know. Cody, how did you feel about that? And how did you feel about this episode in general? And sorry if I'm dropping this weird meta evaluation onto you. I feel like as we get closer and closer to the end of the series, the meta evaluations sort of become more and more significant.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you brought that part up. The sort of behind the scenes of like this episode was meant to be one particular thing, which I do have feelings about. I guess kind of leading off with, I did like this episode, I think, overall. The even just this episode capturing the vibes, which you haven't really gotten from this show yet, even though, I mean, the show has kind of scraped the bottom of the nostalgia barrel in a variety of ways, and like very good, rewarding ways. But we haven't really gotten the sense of like sibling tag-alongs and like when either your siblings or your friend's siblings try to tag along for activities and like they don't necessarily quite vibe with your friend group, or what the episode eventually gets into with like either if they're just like younger siblings of friends, or like I don't know, I came from like a daycare childhood, so just like if you're at a big daycare and they're like different age groups, that was sort of like a weird thing. That was different social situations that are really difficult to navigate, and reliving those vicariously through this episode was I mean, like squirmy and awkward, but like there's definitely, I don't know, seeing that the fact that I felt those same sort of emotions and that those were evoked here, I think is like a high mark for this episode. I found myself getting frustrated while watching this episode for reasons that y'all have largely already touched on. The fact that this is meant to be sort of a bow tying of the Lila subplot is, again, that's I've expressed frustration on that whenever it comes up in episodes since, whichever season 3 or 4 episode it was, where it felt very definitive that this was being put to rest. And Lila said, for once and for all, Arnold, I don't see you that way. And then it just kind of resurfaces in various ways as like a dangling carrot.
Just kind of when they need it.
Right. Yeah. If they need to throw it in as some kind of, you know, character impulse, I don't know. I hate that. It's the, you know, the sort of Steve Urkel, I'm wearing her down sort of thing. I don't know. Not like 100%, but there's certainly an element of that where Arnold is, you can see the gears turning of like exhibit A, this episode, where like, if I do this thing, maybe I can get her to like double back on that proclamation that she doesn't want to, that she doesn't think of me in that way. So like that part was frustrating. As it was already pointed out, this is an episode where Arnold learns a lesson because he's doing some kind of shady things. Gerald's sort of removal from this whole thing was also kind of a weird energy. Not that he's obligated to like resolve it, but he was very, you get the sense from him a couple of times, like he'll turn back to Arnold and be like, why have you not like taken care of this thing with my sister, my like kid sister? And that was, I don't know, sort of weird. I feel like a good friend and brother would have like maybe done a little bit more other than just like, let me know when this is taken care of. So that was kind of annoying. Did not love hearing Sid say hubba hubba multiple times with regards to like a 9-year-old and 6-year-old romance. That really made me feel strange. Kind of a scuzzy thing from Sid. But ultimately, I mean, it's a Hey Arnold episode. The beats, you know, it plays better, you know, it's, I think, better than the sum of its parts. And honestly, really liked Timberlee's presence this episode. I think it's like a really good character vibe that she exudes. It made me think of, you know, she's so earnest with her poetry. She's like, I wonder what would happen if Helga got wind about this, because Timberlee was like, I like this boy and I'm going to write poetry about him and give it away to strangers for free. And I don't care what anybody thinks about me. And you know what? Good for her. Those poems were cool and cute. And I don't know, Arnold Lemonade sounds really yummy. So that, I don't know, that just sort of like wholesome earnest kid energy was really, I don't know, like I said, wholesome and warm to watch. I don't know, the kind of mental juggling, emotional juggling of that ending is manifested in the way that Lila, you know, literally goes back and forth. They're just like, I feel this way, ABC, but I also feel this way, ABC. And that's why this resolution is very complicated. And then she walks away. And that's kind of how I feel about it as well. But, you know, overall, I think I came away positively because I like Lemonade. You know, what else is there to say?
Impressed and disappointed, much like Lila. I like leaving it there. I don't know. I mean, I think we've talked about it a little bit already, but I just think that, like, particularly, and again, like, I don't want to play armchair director and I don't want to critique something that may or may not have been the actual stated purpose of the episode, but like, if we are going to do a final Lila episode, I think it has to be an episode where Arnold actually realizes that Lila's never going to like him that way. I would maybe even prefer, like, if Arnold had to really reckon with the fact that, like, he had to come out of denial, right? Like, if Gerald had to be like, look, I know you think she's stringing you along, or you think that there's a chance, and she said that maybe there's a chance someday, or there's hope, but there isn't, dude, and you just gotta, like, you gotta move on and let it go. Not only do I think that that would have actually put a bow on Lila, but I think it's kind of an episode we really needed. And like this episode, like, again, this is all alleged, like you said, Cody, but like, this episode's so, like, pointedly doesn't do that, and so pointedly, like, leaves on the note of, like, Arnold the hopeless romantic is going to keep pursuing Lila forever. At least that was my feeling about it. Like, we don't see anything that suggests that Arnold no longer likes Lila. Except, I guess, if you want to read into it in the next episode, Stinky says that he has a crush on Lila and Arnold doesn't really react to it. And the fact that Arnold is like Lila's love interest in the play doesn't seem to affect him that much. Maybe that's what they were going for, but like, that's a stretch, I think. I don't know. I think that, like, maybe this is an example of sort of like, as we wrap up the series, this episode has a little bit too much to juggle. That being said, like, back to the impressed part, like, I think it does so with aplomb, right? Like, I think that I agree with you, Cody, like, bringing back Timberly is a really good idea. She's such a fun character. She's so dynamic. She is like a flavor that we don't get in this show very often, because like a little sister is not something we see very often. It's super fun to think about writing first graders versus fourth graders and the like ocean of difference between those age brackets, even though, like, you know, being old men ourselves, old people on this podcast, we maybe don't see that big a difference. It turns out that, like, obviously, I think it was super smart of Craig to be like, actually, like, there's a gigantic world of difference between a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old, right? So that was really cool. I think that's a really fun dynamic to explore. Definitely agree with you about Gerald, a little bit derelict in his brotherly duties. But on the other hand, there is something kind of hilarious if you're in that position to watch your best friend get super exasperated trying to flee from the affections of your little sister. So maybe he was just sort of selfishly taking advantage of that. Whom among us, you know, et cetera. But yeah, so honestly, I think it's an episode that's a little bit hampered by everything that it's trying to do and everything that it's trying to be. And the like sort of cleanup hitter position that it's playing, to use a sports reference. I think I found myself enjoying it quite a bit. And it, in fact, I think it like, it it's one of the, I would say it's in the upper tier of season 5 episodes for what it's worth. I think it's a very valid addition to that.
I had no idea until y'all said that this was supposed to be wrapping a bow on the whole Lila spiel, or like creating this path towards Helga and Arnold, which now I feel weirder about the episode now that I know that, I think. And Helga is also not in the episode at all. It's like, so we just allude to her with the little girl. Timberly has poems and a lemonade stand. It's so over the top of expressions of affection towards Arnold, where we're just like reminded of Helga, but we don't see her. She's not there at all. She's not even in the background, I don't think. So are we just, as a fourth grade viewer of the show, are we supposed to kind of like connect the dots and go, oh yeah, like it doesn't make sense that the little kid and Arnold are a thing? That's obviously not how it works, but maybe this reminds me of Helga, and maybe Arnold and Helga, like, is that where it's going, like just in the background? But then to Harry's point too, I really wish it was more direct about addressing Arnold's feelings of Lila and completing that like emotional core to him, or like finishing at him letting go officially on in the show, instead of just it kind of leaving it open-ended even at the end, which I agree, I feel like that conversation is still kind of open. So yeah,
that's, I think those are really good considerations, and I'm trying to place myself into like fourth grade me watching this show. I don't know if I would have made the connection as a kid that like Timberly, the, you know, the poetic soul is in love with Arnold, and like, hey, there are glimmers of some other, you know, well-known, well-beloved character on the show who also is in love with Arnold. Like there's something there. But that, watching it this time, and I do remember watching this episode previously, not as familiar with episode B, which obviously we'll get to. But that is something that really stood out to me, and maybe it is because we're fresh on off the heels of episodes exploring the sort of emotional interiorities of these, I mean, specifically the main characters. But I think it's fascinating in that this episode does sort of little things to add to the, like the Hillwood ecosystem, or just like the ecosystem of the show, of like, you know, hey, I've never seen Grandpa talk to Timberly, or it's like, oh yeah, I forgot that like Rhonda and Sid are part of this group, and like we never actually see them play baseball, but they're walking off the baseball field, and they're not characters I would typically imagine playing baseball, but they play baseball because they're, you know, they're fourth graders with friends who play baseball. Of course they play baseball. So just like, again, filling out that map a little bit more, but then also going further to suggest that like the emotional interiorities of all of these characters and all of people in real life too, they come from different places, and like it's cool to see Timberly very comfortable with expressing herself in that way. And while also recognizing that there is, and I think y'all gestured at it as well, the sort of gulf that exists between first graders, if Timberly's a like first graders and fourth graders, we'll say like that is a potentially huge gulf for them at that time. And then also just thinking about it on the scale of like, you know, emotional maturity, you know, 9 year olds compared to 6 year olds, that's, they've lived half another lifetime, in that time, right? It's wild. Math is tricky. So yeah, I don't know. I think that is something that the episode is, I mean, I think that's a good call out, Emily. I think that is something that the show is probably, looking to like plot and get us thinking about. At least I got thinking about it now. It probably went over my head as a kid, but I'm stronger, mentally, and I'm more mature now. So it did not elude me this time, evade me. You know what I mean?
Went over your head like the baseball went over their heads, and Gerald got to say the line, "Hey Arnold, heads up," which I was like, "Hey, yes,
yeah, big shout-outs for sure."
Very end of the series, we had to do it. Extremely we had to do good. It at Gerald Field for sure.
Oh yeah!
Wow, great point. Yeah, I think that, or at the very least, even if there isn't like a concrete association, I do appreciate the irony, right, of like Timberly having this crush on Arnold also, but just being so ridiculously open about expressing it, and how funny it is that like Helga thinks the apocalypse would happen if anybody ever knew, and has gone to superhuman lengths to stop it from happening, and Timberly just tweets it. She just tweets it out. She's just like, yeah, hi Arnold, I like you, you're my boyfriend. It's pretty funny, I think. Let's see, I only had one shout out, and it was to Thelonious Monk, so Emily, you got there, so thank you. Arnold, great taste in jazz. I mean, we've been new, but Thelonious Monk's great, so check him out, I guess. Shout outs to Thelonious Monk.
Check them out. Check out the jazz section at your local record store. I wanted to shout out a dog named Arnold who I met today. And apparently he frequents the pet store sometimes even twice a day because he's amazing. Such a good boy.
What kind of dog are we talking about? What breed are we rolling with? Thereabouts. You know, can ballpark it.
I don't know breeds very well, but he was tall. He had the fluffy, curly white fur. Where he's all curly and the big floppy curly ears where their fur's kind of hanging over their eyes. He was really cute. He was a really good boy.
Okay, that was my follow-up question, is can you confirm he was a good boy? It sounds like we have confirmation.
Oh, he definitely was a good boy, and I think that's why he probably goes to the pet store twice a day.
Excellent, excellent,
because he's
excellent.
The star of the show there.
That's,
and
yeah,
here.
But yeah, no, a huge shout out's well warranted all around. Hopefully, he's a listener and this gets out to him. Admittedly, I was just fishing for, you know, there are two breeds of dogs. There are corgis and non-corgis. And that's, and
you just had to ask.
Yeah, I had to ask. So yeah, shout outs there. Shout outs to, Timberly rhyming player and prayer. Extremely good. That really hit a good
drop the mixtape, Timberly.
Yeah. Here's hoping. We'll throw it in the show notes once it gets released. Maybe it'll be an exclusive through the Stoop Kids Pod online shop. I don't know what I'm doing. But what I do know is that I went for a run earlier today. Shout outs to me. And I'm severely dehydrated. I could use a pitcher of Arnold lemonade. So I'm going to chug one of those bad boys. We'll get right back to it afterward. Do not touch that dial. We'll be right back after the break.
We're singing all the way through this one.
we can. Do you all want to?
Here we go.
Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We've got episode 97B up next. Kiss my ass. Do you remember Billy Madison, dear listener? There's that musical number in the third act. That's, I think it was sung to the tune of that. Shout out to Billy Madison. Shout out to Eugene. The original air date for this episode was January 20th, 2003. The Wikipedia sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Eugene gets the lead role in the fourth grade production of Eugene. But the embittered director, Mr. Leeklighter, removes all signs of hope from the script, having changed the ending himself to reflect real life. Then in parentheses, it is apparent he was influenced by his own past relationship with a woman. Close parentheses. Meanwhile, Lila gets the role of the leading lady in the play, and with Arnold playing the villain pursuing her, Helga attempts to sabotage her during the play. So that is the synopsis we're working with, the writers and directors we're working with, a director first, Christine Kolosoff, and as far as writers go, Craig Bartlett, show author returns to the fold alongside esteemed veteran Michelle Lamoureux. So shout outs all around. Shout outs to Harry, who is going to sing his takes about this episode. Harry, here we go.
Thanks, Cody. You can auto-tune this in post-production, Jason. I'm gonna go ahead and kick that down the field a little bit. I like this episode a lot, even though it's, I think it's pretty overstuffed. First of all, I think it's so funny that it's called Eugene. I don't know why they, like, why does the play have to be named after Eugene as well? Like, I get the metaphor, right? The idea that, like, oh, it's just like how it's about Eugene. But the entire time I was like, so did his parents, like, name him after this play? Or, like, is that what's going on? And like, or like, why did we have to call it Eugene? It was kind of distracting, which I thought was really funny. The play itself is also very funny. It's the role that Eugene was literally born to play, obviously. I think, like I said, I really like this as a Eugene episode. I love his sort of like plucky optimism. I love that Arnold sort of takes this active role in making the right thing happen. I think that Arnold almost takes on like a Helga-esque position in this episode, where like we've always sort of characterized that Arnold is the dreamer and Helga is the sort of engine of those dreams. She makes them happen, as evidenced in like the Christmas episode and countless other episodes. Here, Arnold understands that what's happening is wrong, right? Like he shouldn't be given the final song. We should have a happy, optimistic ending the way that Eugene wants, because this is really Eugene's favorite play, and it would mean so much to him if he got to sing his final song for this play that means so much to him. And so Arnold makes it happen, right? Like he says, like, we're going to go above and we're going to go over the head of the director. We're going to restore the original ending with or without his approval. Very punk, very cool, very anti-authoritarian. And as Cody often notes, this is an anti-authoritarian podcast. So rock on with your bad self, Arnold. That being said, I think that there's a bunch of other stuff going on in this episode that maybe doesn't super need to be there. I thought that, as funny as I really love what's his name, Mr. It's like, I kept thinking that they were calling him Mr. Linklater.
Leeklighter.
It's Leeklighter, and I looked it up, yeah. And it's after a production member of the show, so it's not actually a reference to Richard Linklater, but I thought it was for a second, and I was like, that's bizarre. Like, I don't really think he like would be the first director I would target for this, but he's really funny. He's voiced by Tim Curry. We get to hear Tim Curry even sing "Nice Guys Finish Last," "Bad Guys Have a Blast." Amazing song, super funny. But like the whole, like the idea that his relationship soured and then that's why he rewrote the play, super funny at first. Didn't really love the resolution, didn't really think it was necessary for her to inexplicably reappear and declare her love for him, though maybe that's sort of like a nice bookend to the idea of the optimism that Arnold has renewed within all of these characters, right? The sort of idea that you can go out, you can make the right thing happen if you work hard enough, and if you don't listen to cynical authoritarian members of society who are trying to stop you. So that's cool. I also think that like Helga's role in this episode is so perfunctory that it didn't need to be there at all, and I thought it was super weird that it was there, especially because this episode's like 11 minutes long. Two of those minutes are just about Helga. Her storyline plays out completely in the background with no interaction with anybody else. And even sort of further undermines the idea of the Lila tie-up from the last episode, right? Because Lila has the role of love interest. Arnold ends up getting with her in the play's new bad ending, new evil ending, so to speak. And that's what bothers Helga, so she tries to sabotage it. It turns out that she didn't know Arnold was going to change this. So when the endings change, she quick tries to undo her sabotaging, which was that paint was going to fall on Helga and Lila, and the paint falls on her instead. That's it. That's all we get from Helga this episode. Real missed opportunity there. Like, either cut that out or, like, do something with it, I guess. Especially because, like, Arnold never had that sort of, like moral conundrum where he was like, oh, but, like, if I like, keep the play's original ending, I'll get to kiss Lila at the end or whatever, right? And, like, that would have been an interesting angle. I think probably the reason they didn't do that is because of the aforementioned sort of, like, motivation that they had to tie that off in the last episode. So, yeah, weird that they cast Lila in that. Weird that it didn't come to anything. Weird that we had this Helga thing play out in the background. But the A-plot, right, like, the actual meat of this episode, with Eugene and with Arnold deciding that he's taking control of the play, so to speak, that stuff is really good. So I think overall I like this episode. I think it's really funny. I love Tim Curry. Obviously, everybody loves Tim Curry, so it was super fun to have him back. Would have loved to have seen his rivalry with Simmons rekindled, but alas, we can't have everything, and this episode is overstuffed as it is. So yeah, overall, I think it's another one kind of like Kimberly Loves Arnold, where, like, my headline is good episode, and then my subhead is like, I've got some issues with it, I guess.
No, extremely fair. Somewhat unrelated, but the scholars Green Day noted in their song Nice Guys Finish Last, and I quote, that nice guys finish last when you run out of gas, but Emily has great stuff to say, so we should ask her what she thinks about this episode, end quote. So that's, again, that comes from Green Day directly. Emily, we should kick it to you. What did you think about Eugene?
Yeah, thanks for asking. And the Green Day lines that didn't hit the top 100, unfortunately. But
somehow,
Eugene, I think we all love Eugene. He's a really good character. And I wondered, you know, right away, like, so is this the writer showing how they named Eugene? Like, is this based off of an actual play or something? I loved the intro music too, which is like so triumphant, and we're like, da 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 da, it's Eugene. And we see his enthusiasm for this becoming the school play, and just how excited he is. He's obviously got to get the Eugene role in it. And Stinky immediately going, what the heck's Eugene? So I liked that setup. Agreed that there's a lot going on here, so it does feel pretty packed to the gills as far as an episode goes. And because it reminds me of school play so much, which is a special episode, it calls back to that one a lot. It does feel like it is like a full two-parter, but it is just one. So yeah, I was wondering, like, isn't this school play? Didn't we see this kind of before? This is Mr. Linklater, I also thought his name was, Harry. But yeah, I really enjoyed their rehearsals. I thought that was a fun scene where we just see quickly Sid, Rhonda, and Lila each do really good takes on very different dramatic portrayals of different characters, which don't really come back in later, but really fun to see him there. And I loved Arnold in the rehearsals singing the super flat, nice guys finish last, just like completely flat throughout the entire performance was great. And him telling Eugene, I can't watch you get hit by that trolley again. So they went on their anti-authoritarian stoop there, and they rewrote the play, which was great. I really liked their rewrite. I thought that was awesome. Eugene just kicking down the door or like getting up after the trolley hits him and being like, yeah, I'm okay. Slams the door down. Like, all of that was great. And what else? Eugene just crushing it throughout that rewrite. I loved that he gives Lila the lines too on one of the book props. So like just the plan that him and Arnold put together really haphazardly and quickly turned out so well. And I think I enjoyed the Helga's law of karma there, just like a quick little nod to every time she goes after somebody or has like a mean-spirited plan, the law of karma like balances things out in the universe and she gets her comeuppance. But she really wasn't there other than to like play that Carrie type of role with the paint, which I swear she was doing in school play. But yeah, I want to hear what you think, Cody.
Thank you. You two kind of kick things off pretty well with this episode. I'll start with stuff that I particularly liked. I liked the energy this episode brought up top with just everybody generally being very down for whatever like the episode was going to be, like if that makes sense. I mean, with Sid of all people, who I just finished, you know, dumping on a little bit last episode, him being like, essentially, hey, everybody, let's all go try out for the play. She's like, yeah, man, that's tight. So Sid not being a dissenter, they're not really being an obvious dissenter. Then the punchline of that scene being like, Helga's sort of hesitant. Phoebe's like, we get paid $2 an hour or whatever it is. That's, you know, it's kind of funny. But that's, I don't know, going through, I'm a sucker for the sorts of like, what everybody's auditions look like. We only got a couple of those, which is fine. You only have 11 minutes to work with. This isn't a double length episode, so that's okay. But that's, I liked that energy coming into it. Leaklighter, the king of the incels, was somewhat fun. Hearing Tim Curry returning to this role and really feasting, I think, in a way that Leaklighter hasn't really been able to on the show up to this point. He really got some good sequences, not like Tim Curry unhinged in the way that he can like really go at it. But as far as Harold goes, I think he was, I don't know, it got the job done. It fit the bill. So it was good having him back. Having his lady friend show up at the end was so over the top dumb that I just kind of liked it. Like I got an audible laugh.
Pretty good
at
point.
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's so stupid though. Like, why would she come back? It's so unnecessary, and that's all the more reason why it stuck the landing when it happened. I liked the Arnold and Eugene teaming up sentiment, and them just being on board from the beginning of like, hey, I don't like my role, you don't like your role, let's like work to like figure this out. And that does, it's kind of a double edged sword because I don't think that team up would work with the. We've talked in the first episode, I think earlier this season, where the Eugene voice actor switched and we were kind of dancing around the fact that it's just like a different characterization of Eugene. And I think that is very true this episode as well. I don't think the season like 1 through 4 characterization of Eugene that is nothing to say about the voice actor. All the voice actors for Eugene have been very talented. It's just like, the characterization is just very textually different. There's sort of an uncertainty and a the Eugene in this episode, I would almost say he's a bold kid. You know, he's advocating for himself in a way that we're not, and maybe that's just the effect of him working with Arnold. So I don't know. I liked that they teamed up, but I'm still not like 100% a fan of the. I guess the new vocal performance and the characterization of Eugene. But it's, I don't know. That's, I'm more so, I guess, just splitting hairs at that point. It got the episode to kind of the through line that it needed to get to, which I'm all about. I agree the Helga subplot. I mean, it was an afterthought, but at the same time, it's the only part that we had Helga on screen this whole week. And so like, I would rather have it there than not have it there, I guess is my bottom line conclusion. For as unnecessary as it is, you know, you still like seeing Helga bopping around in the background doing her, you know, Looney Tunes villain esque shenanigans. And yeah, it all comes back, to hit her in a karma sufficient way. And I think the last thing, sort of a weird thing to drop after, I don't know, I'm kind of stumbling through this, but I couldn't help, and maybe it was just me or, you know, us watching episode A and coming off of a very Lila centric episode. I began to read too much into, is this play meant to be metatextual for like the Arnold Lila through line, the sort of like the nice guys finish last? Does the show see Arnold as the nice guy who is finishing last? Is this attempt to like rewrite the play an attempt to like rectify that in some way? I came to the conclusion, I mean, ultimately, I don't think that's what's going on. And especially if the what we talked about during the episode A discussion is true, where episode A is meant to be sort of the bow tying, of that plot line, where we're cutting things off with, you know, we're not exploring the kind of Lila, you know, the Lila situation, the capital L, capital S Lila situation. We're not exploring that any longer. We're setting it up for Arnold and Helga for the rest of the shows, you know, for the rest of the story for these characters in the show and beyond. So like there are a lot of reasons playing against that, but I couldn't help but think about that in the background. Just sort of thing, confounding things, bouncing around in my head as I'm trying to read too hard into the last handful of episodes that we have. But those are the things that that I was gravitating toward. Who doesn't love a good musical episode? We already had one of those, but I enjoyed this one too. What the hey?
I'm really glad you brought that up about Eugene. It really got me thinking about how. You know, there is no little wiki note that says this, but like if that last episode was supposed to be a Lila tie-up episode and it wasn't successful, then if this one wasn't trying to be a Eugene wrap-up episode, then it was very successful. And looking back, I think Eugene is one of the most major characters in the show, and I actually really like the idea that this is a wrap-up episode for him, or sort of a literal swan song, if you will, right? Because it's like, ever since Eugene's bike, Eugene has had this very nuanced relationship with Arnold and the rest of the characters, where Arnold in particular is always trying to do right by Eugene, and the universe itself keeps getting in his way. And I really like this idea that, like, you know, you had said that maybe this characterization of Eugene doesn't work for you. I don't disagree with that. I do think that there has been a shift, and I'm not necessarily willing to give the show the benefit of thinking that the reason that shift exists is because of character development. But I think that it sings well, again, no pun intended, in this situation, right? In the sense that, like, Eugene does feel more mature here, right? He feels more self-possessed. He feels more aware of who he is and what he wants, and he feels more ready to actively advocate for himself and to be sort of a willing participant in Arnold's designs, right? Arnold's sort of proactive attempts to get the world to sort of align with Eugene's will, because that's what's right, or that's what they want, right? I think that, and so I really like this idea that, like, for the first time ever, Eugene and Arnold are co-collaborators in this, like, Operation Make Eugene's Day, right? Whereas throughout the series, Arnold has always been on his own and trying to sort of pull that off in the background without letting Eugene know. Or even if he does speak to Eugene about it, Eugene sort of brushes him off and it's like, no, what do you mean? You did a great job. And, like, I loved that. And, like, oh, I'm so happy and fortunate. I think it's really cool that, like, finally Eugene is, I guess Eugene has always recognized Arnold's as a good friend for wanting to help him. But I think that there's something really notable about the fact that they work together this time and they are successful, right? It's like Eugene actually gets his way for once, which never happens before and probably won't happen again, right? Because he's still Eugene and the stage still comes crumbling down. But I really like this idea that, like, hey, like, maybe it's going to take the entirety of the Hey Arnold series, but Arnold, like, if you keep trying to do right by Eugene and you keep, like, being his friend and supporting him on his terms, he's going to see that and you're going to win out, and eventually he's going to have his day, right? I think that, like, way back when Arnold said, I'm going to give that geek his day, I think he did this time around, right? And I think that's pretty cool. And I think it's cool that Eugene played a role in it. So I hadn't really considered this as a sort of conclusion to Eugene's arc, if you will, in the series. But reading it that way is something I think I really like, whether or not it was entirely intentional. Mostly because I love Eugene, you know, and I love to see him win. I love to see him come a long way. I think this puts a new sort of triumphant spin on a lot of the previous Eugene episodes in a way that I really like.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it is putting that conclusion on Eugene's character and his relationship to Arnold, especially when you mentioned Eugene's bike. That was the very first 1B. That was the first episode to Downtown is Fruits. So Eugene definitely has played a huge role in the whole series, and I like seeing it as a way to look back on how important he was to the series and that he finally has a win here, a grand moment on stage with a win.
Yeah, you love to see it. He got there. I forget, he may have just been doing, did he just do the Eugene, one of the Eugene numbers for his audition, or did he do a different bop?
I can't remember. I feel like it wasn't a Eugene, or at least one we didn't see, but it's also super funny that like he keeps screwing up, right? But the fact that he screws up keeps getting interpreted. Oh no, he did. He sang Sunny Side Up, which I believe is the final number of Eugene in his audition. So he was just like, he was obviously perfect for the role right from the start. But I love that he keeps screwing up, and Linklater loves that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's tough though. I mean, singing a song from the play while you're auditioning for that play, kind of like wearing a band t-shirt to a concert for that band. You know, it's a little much, Eugene.
He should have done some Tennessee Williams, like my man Sid. God, that was funny when he's like, "Yeah, I'm going to do something from Streetcar Named Desire." I was like, "All right, Sid, wow."
Stella!
And then of course it was Stella, right? Because he's like little Sylvester Stallone almost or something. Yeah.
And that is actually, that's my question for y'all. You know, hypothetically, if we existed in a world where we were all as raring to try out for the school play as the characters in this episode were, what would y'all, it doesn't matter what the show is. It doesn't have to necessarily be musically inclined. But what would you use as your scene or your monologue that you would leverage? This is, every year I watch, and I guess it traces back a little bit to the beginning of this episode, but every year I'll, around the holidays, I'll revisit It's a Wonderful Life. And there are a handful of James Stewart monologues that I just like, because I just, living in that sweaty, frustrated man's head, that tall, lanky sack of sand, James Stewart, with him just like building up. I think the monologue where he calls Potter a warped, frustrated old man. I just can't help but like, ooh, like really like living in that sort of frustration. And if I could ever translate that to, you know, the stage, I feel like that would, my life would be different and maybe even better, because I would be famous. I think that's the scene that would really bring it all home for me. That's the thing that I think of first, but I'd be curious to hear what scenes or monologues y'all would go with for your audition tape things, your tryouts.
Oh man, this is a great question, Cody, thank you. I don't know if I've ever brought this up on the podcast before, so I apologize if I had or have. My senior year of high school for my English class, I did a scene from Waiting for Godot where I brought hand puppets. My left hand was, I believe, Vladimir, and my right hand was Estragon, and I had them converse as if I was playing both parts, Vladimir and Estragon, in Samuel Beckett's play Waiting for Godot. And it really brought the house down, obviously. So I think I would do a one-man show of Waiting for Godot in which I played all of the roles, including, you know, there are four roles in Waiting for Godot. I would play all of them. And I think the scene that I would do would be the one where Vladimir and Estragon are talking about hanging themselves, but Estragon is afraid that if he hangs himself, he'll get an erection, because that was something that happened during that play. And I think it would be really fun to illustrate that using my hand puppets. So that would be my answer, I believe.
Man, this is a really good question, and I had to think about it too for a while. I think I would do the Inigo Montoya scene. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father, prepared to die, from Princess Bride. It would just be fun to do that scene and have a sword on stage.
You would look amazing with a mustache, Emily, I would just say.
Thank you. And the whole frilly, frilly shirt. That would be a good look. But my dad also would perform that scene a lot when we would watch Princess Bride many a times as a kid. So I think I could recreate that one pretty well.
Amazing. Two things to respond to the things that y'all just talked about. Number one, Emily, I'm in the same boat in that I think my father and I would be able to recreate that scene. We There's a different podcast that some of us here are on where we recently talked about The Princess Bride, and I can't remember if it came up then, but just like the cable rewatchability of Princess Bride. If my, like my dad specifically, I think my parents in general, if they saw that that was on, they would specifically look for that scene, with Inigo Montoya. And my dad always got a kick out of, I mean, it brings the house down every time. But when, what's his name? I'm brain farting so hard, but when Inigo Montoya says it for the millionth time, the other guy goes, "Stop saying that."
So good.
Extremely funny.
Christopher Guest is the other guy.
Oh wow! No, oh yeah. I was thinking about of Humperdinck. Of course, that's yeah. Christopher.
Oh yeah, Guest, I don't know Humperdinck's name.
He's of note, but Christopher Guest is maybe just more notable, at least from my perspective. So that's fully agreed on that, Emily. The other thing, Harry, you talking about doing speeches for high school classes. In my senior year, I waited until the last possible semester to take the required speech class, the one semester speech class that every student at my high school had to take. And in retrospect, it was very stupid to do this. But me and myself and three other people in the speech class did for our reading. I forget exactly what the unit was or what the type of speech was, but you had the opportunity to do something from, or like portray something from a movie or like an established work, something like that. And so my group did the adrenaline shot scene from Pulp Fiction. I think I may have just like recently discovered Pulp Fiction or something. We had to cut out a lot of the profanity, not necessarily because the teacher didn't want it, but because one of our foursome was especially Christian and did not want to say any curse words. So a lot of red flags to start. But I was the John Travolta, Vincent Vega. And so I have the first line of the thing, and I'm very nervous. I'm getting ready to, you know, really put my heart into the scene. Before I can get my first line out, my stomach just decides, "Hey man, time to burp." And so I let out this huge belch before I could get any of my lines out, after it was established that we were starting this thing, the actual speech. Not a lot of people in that class had seen Pulp Fiction, so they thought the burp was like part of it.
It's just part of it. Yeah. No, you're in it. Your method.
It's I don't know why I felt compelled to share it, to share that particular story, but hey, if you you stuck around this long, you learned a little something. So that's so there's that. That's all.
Well,
I have to say
I'm so glad
speeches.
That you did, Cody. Sure. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Thank you. What anything else you all want to talk about with regards to speeches you had to give, auditions you took part in, anything also more directly relevant to this episode? Shout outs.
Sure.
Lingering threads we didn't get to. Yeah, go for it.
Shout out to Arnold's little mustache and his suit. He's looking very fly in his theater getup.
And his slicked back hair.
Oh, yeah.
I wrote that down as shout out to.
Yeah, definitely. He looks great. And shout outs to Eugene's frankly superhuman feats of acrobatics that he pulls off multiple times in this episode, including springing from the top of a grand piano onto the stage again, and I think doing two front flips in the process. So, Eugene, you know, if that luck thing ever turns around, you've got a future in the circus, my man. So shout outs to Eugene, a really great character, a really underrated part of Hey Arnold canon. I'm really glad that he got his place in the sun here.
Same. Shout out Eugene. And also shout out to Stoop Kid in the audience watching Eugene. Love to see him. He was just silently applauding.
You love to see representation.
Oh, and shout out to the Abdicator, because we see Eugene's room very briefly, and the Abdicator is there. So,
yeah, he was there abdicating. Wow.
So much representation
out.
Just all around.
That's right. Representation that you can only find here on Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Thank you so much for listening to it. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. That's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson. You can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I've been Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
And once again, thank you to those who listened. It's I don't know, it's silly but beautiful that we have so many fans, so many adoring fans who tune in. So many fans. I mean, who do we think we are? Rudolph Valentino?